Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, typically there would be, in that kind of situation, there'd usually be an amendment that would move some money around within the bill, oftentimes cutting something in one other place and increasing it to meet the need that was specified in the fiscal note. The bill would also still have to, under the rules for the last 4 years, had to fit within the budget targets, which also essentially applied that limit. The difference here would be that this is a spending limit, as opposed to what in the budget targets they talk about. There's the reference is net spending, and net spending would be has been defined as spending minus plus or minus changes in revenue. So it's changes in revenue. This rule would preclude a revenue change as part of that balancing act to make that amendment fit.
Thank you, Mr. Marks. Yeah. We still have to pay for all our amendments. Further discussion? Yes, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since I'm new to the committee and new to Rules Committee, I may be asking questions which will seem obvious to some, but in regards to this particular rule, if we were talking about, for example, tax expenditures, a proposal maybe to reduce business corporate taxes, and someone introduced an amendment to reduce instead corporate property taxes, but the sum total of tax reduction would be the same, would that be in order or not?
Thank you, Representative Benson. And Mr. Marks, you want to field this one as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, in defining essentially the budget resolution, and I would assume this spending limit as well, we've typically used what the Minnesota Management and Budget uses in the fund balance statements. And there, what people would call tax expenditures are changes in revenue. So a change in a tax credit brings in less revenue. A change in a tax, or could actually bring in more revenue. A change in a tax deduction would bring in more or less revenue. So that's been largely left within the revenue side of the equation and not on the spending side. So if that traditional definition or that definition that we've always used is continuing to be used, the proposed 4.05 would not regulate the revenue side. It regulates the spending side and would not include changes in what are called tax expenditures, because they're counted on the revenue side though they're called tax expenditures.
Thank you, Mr. Marks. Further discussion? Representative Thiessen.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Is that the intent of the author, that interpretation is going to apply?
Representative Thiessen, yes. We had discussed that with Ways and Means Chair, and in moving forward, that is the intent.
Okay, so just so I'm clear, so tax expenditures are not subject to Rule 4.05. It's just on the spending side, on spending in the budget bills. And that's what I heard Mr. Marks saying.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I also had a question, Mr. Chair. So say we come, like we faced last fall, where we came in and had a special session to deal with the flooding down in southern Minnesota. And in past years, typically, budget resolutions just apply during the session in which the budget resolution is adopted. And then we come and are going to be spending more money, maybe having to move more quickly. Is this going to have any impact on our ability to deal with emergency situations in a special session, because this is a permanent rule?
Representative Thiessen, that's an excellent question, and our budget targets are fairly fixed. Mr. Marks, do you have any historical data on that, on what we've done in the past for special sessions and moving ahead?
Mr. Chair, the budget resolution only applies to the session in which it's enacted, and that's the language in here. This would proposed Rule 4.05 would apply during a special session, but again, it applies to amendments. So if what has happened in recent special sessions is that if there is a bill introduced, and often that's a negotiated agreement already, this would not interfere with that bill being introduced or acted on. It would preclude amendments to that bill that would spend more money, amendments on the House floor. If there was a proposal to increase spending in at that time on the House floor, it would require either the bill to be sent to Ways and Means Committee or the rule to be suspended.
Thank you, Mr. Marks. Further discussion? Representative Benson.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. Well, just to clarify for me, let's say we had an amendment which indirectly led to increased property taxes, for example, at the local level, but it was reduction in spending at the state level. Does this proposed amendment affect that in any way, or is that not germane to what we're discussing now?
Representative Benson, I would imagine that that would could you describe exactly an amendment moving forward where you would see that applicable?
Well, let's say there was a proposal to reduce revenue sharing to counties and cities, which resulted in those counties and cities, in order to provide the basic services, had to increase property tax. Would this amendment have any relationship to that, or is that not germane to this purpose of this amendment?
Representative Benson, the purview of the local authorities to raise their own property taxes is granted upon them, and I know there's a lot of discussion that we would like to talk about at the state level that would link those two. Perhaps Mr. Marks could amplify on that, but I would think not.
Mr. Chair and Representative Benson, in thinking about it, there's probably an argument that could be made along those lines, that if an amendment on the floor reduced aids to local governments, that and that results in an increase in property tax levies, that then because the property tax refunds are linked to what level the levies are, there's probably an argument that could be made along those lines that this would prevent that.
Just a brief follow-up, if I may.
Representative Benson.
If, for example, the state had on its books certain requirements for services to be provided by local governments, which would, in fact, then force them to increase local property tax, would that be germane to this proposed amendment?
Once again, Representative Brenton, the argument has been and continually will be made that what we would do will automatically dictate a local property tax increase. I would think that we would give our local officials a lot more credit than that. And what we do is our responsibility, and what they do is their responsibility. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's it. I think you just addressed the issue.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move to delete Rule 4.05. Mr. Chair, as we were putting together the budget during the past fiscal crisis, there were times in which we were told by groups that we could cut the money in the beginning year and then help fix it and restore it in the out years. And I think that this, as we deal with this large budget deficit, will not give us the flexibility to actually do the business of the House in a proper manner. So I would make the motion to delete Rule 4.05.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would also support the motion. You know, as we move forward with what looks to be this all-cuts approach to balancing the budget, you know, there's been lots of discussion by members of the Republican Party that we need to be deliberate and thoughtful about how we prioritize our spending decisions. And one of the places that we need to be deliberate and thoughtful about that is on the House floor, where the whole body of the House, for the first time, has a chance to weigh in on what those priorities should be. And I think this amendment, like some of the other process things that we've seen already in this session, is going to eliminate our ability not only to take public input, but as a body of the whole, to have a real discussion about what those priorities should be. And so I would encourage members who want a voice in what the whole budget should be, and I would think that would be members on both sides of the aisle, would be very cautious about putting in an amendment like 4.05 or a rule like 4.05, which is going to eliminate your ability to actually represent the constituents in your communities about some of the decisions that are going to really affect them drastically. So I'd encourage a yes vote as well.
Members, once again, what this will do is it will force us to be very, very clinical in how we pay for things and how we account for things on the House floor. That's a continuation of what the minority has instituted in the previous biennium, and it's a common sense way to do that. I would speak against the Hillstrom Amendment, and I would now...
And I'd ask for a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Yes.
Can I ask a question before we vote?
Yes.
Thanks.
Representative Paymar.
I just want to be clear before I vote on this because, you know, I'm not actually sure about it. So I'm just trying to think back to last year, the last 2 years, and there were, like, I would say 20, probably 25 different bills that, amendments that came primarily from your side on the on public safety issues. So if any of those amendments had bed impacts, for instance, increasing crimes, et cetera, they would just be ruled out of order then, because that would change the budget, the public safety budget, or change the court budget, et cetera, et cetera. Am I correct there? Then, so would it be in the judgment of the speaker then, or how would that work?
Representative Paymar is somebody who came up with probably more amendments than anybody else within the Health and Human Services Committee last year. I understood that we had to deal with the funds that we had available within the bill. This tightens it up just a little bit in that. You have to not only stay within the bill but within the fund, so it is a bit of a belt and suspenders approach to that, so that amendments would not only have to be, let's say, removing money from one part of your bill to another part of the bill, it would have to be within the same fund. So it just narrows down the scope of and has to heighten your creativity a little bit as you create amendments to take money from one place and add it to another. So it's a belt and suspenders approach to that. Further discussion, and I would once again, this is to the Hillstrom motion to remove that section. Again, I think that it is important that we keep this in. I would oppose this amendment moving forward, and we will then go to the amendments immediately following. All those in favor of the Hillstrom, or excuse me, I'm sorry, there's a roll call. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Doubt?
No.
Blowski?
Yes.
Anderson?
No.
Banyan?
No.
Benson?
Yes.
Reinert?
Yes.
Hamilton?
No.
Hillstrom?
Yes.
Hoppe?
No.
Howes?
No.
Kelly?
No.
Knuth?
Yes.
Lane?
Yes.
Lilly?
Yes.
Mack?
No.
McNamara?
No.
Murphy?
Yes.
Nornis?
No.
Norton?
Yes.
Paymar?
Yes.
Pepin?
No.
Scott?
No.
Thiessen?
Yes.
Westrom?
No.
Dean?
No. There being 11 ayes and 14 nays, the Hillstrom Amendment is not adopted. We will continue on now and go to amendments. Amendments to the bill are now in order. Anybody want to claim any of these?
Anybody want to claim?
Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the A11 amendment.
Does everyone have the A11 amendment? Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what this amendment does, and this is moving forward, I think, so we just have a little more clarity in our rules about members who have a conviction for driving under the influence. I was talking with Mr. McCormick about the best way to put this into our rules. And basically what this would do is our ethics committee procedure has a several-step procedure. The first step is having two members bring an ethics complaint, and then the next step is there may be some steps in there. The speaker has to do some things, but then the ethics committee has to convene and find that there's probable cause, and then they have then they can make a decision about what to do. And so basically this would just say if there's a conviction for driving under the influence, then the probable cause hearing and the ethics committee could be waived, the requirement for that hearing. So it's making a little more clear that this is something that the House thinks is a serious concern. It does not change whether or not a member can. It does not change if a member or two members would have to bring forward an ethics complaint, but it changes part of the way the ethics committee would have to have their hearings.
Discussion. Representative Paymar.
Chair, as a member of the ethics committee, I won't be voting.
Thank you, Representative Paymar. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Representative Knuth, so what you're saying is we're not really changing the ethics process, because as it stands right now, all it requires is that two members submit a complaint to the ethics committee, and then they're required then to investigate that matter. Is that the case?
Representative Knuth.
Mr. Chair, and Mr. McCormick could probably do this more clearly than I could, but my understanding is this wouldn't have the investigation part. It would be the probable cause hearing would be waived, and then they could make a decision about the action taken by the committee. Maybe Mr. McCormick could explain this more clearly than I'm explaining that.
Mr. McCormick, you want to take a crack?
Sure, Mr. Chair, members. When an ethics complaint is filed by two members and is received by the ethics committee uses the rules of procedure which are adopted by the ethics committee to handle the ethics complaint. Under those rules of procedure, the committee does not conduct an investigation. The committee conducts a probable cause hearing and investigation to determine if they would like to move to an investigation. So the probable cause hearing usually is an opportunity for the people who brought the complaint to bring the complaint. The other side may bring evidence, but the committee may determine there is no probable cause to go forward with an investigation. There is no probable cause to move to the next steps. Under this proposed rule, in the case of a violation of the driving while under influence statutes, 169.8.20. So if a person had been convicted, then when two members brought their complaint to the ethics committee, they would not do the probable cause hearing. They would assume under our rules that probable cause had been met. Then they would move to the next level, which is investigation, full ethics committee hearing, potential consideration of alternative remedies. It would not, under this proposed amendment to the rules, it would not change the options of the Ethics Committee in terms of what punishments they would choose.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Knuth, I'm curious why you decided to limit it just to this violation. Why not say something like theft, say somebody stole literature of some sort, or, you know, something along those lines?
Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My concern is that there's been a number of these incidences both in the House and the Senate, and I think driving under the influence is a serious problem in the state of Minnesota. The numbers I've heard thrown around are 1 in 7, 1 in 8 Minnesotans have a DWI, and I think it's a problem, and we need the legislature to be held, or the House to be held to a higher standard. And so this is a pretty soft way to get at it, but I think it is an important position to have in our rules.
Thank you, Representative Knuth. Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think if someone gets a DUI and is convicted, it's very embarrassing. It's very embarrassing. I don't like the rule you have, but I would offer an oral amendment and that I could possibly vote for it. On line 1.6, after conviction 4, insert a second driving while under the influence. You do it the second time, then maybe that's worth going to this direction, but otherwise I'd be a no on the amendment. I can withdraw it if you really give me a real ugly face. Then I'll leave it.
Further discussion. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sitting right next to him, but I'm going to ask this to Mr. McCormick anyhow. And to follow up on Representative Anderson's question, what I was wondering, and I think I heard the answer, but if this situation occurred, would this require the Ethics Committee to act?
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, no. Members, the Ethics Committee would still have its full range of procedures, included in which is an alternative dispute resolution process, which can be recommended by the members, or they could vote that they do not want to move forward with a complaint by a 2-2 tie vote, or they, and so they have the full range of powers of the Ethics Committee. This would just say the Ethics Committee does not have to start with a probable cause hearing. They're going to move to the next phase.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think my question is to Mr. McCormick. Are there any other actions that would deem that probable cause has been met, similar to what the language states in this?
Mr. Chair, members, no.
Further discussion? Well, members, I would speak against the amendment. I think that this basically takes away the purview of our Ethics Committee, and it also subdivides one offense from a number of offenses that we would have potentially for members moving forward. I think that our Ethics Committee does an excellent job of dealing with these unfortunate incidents as they come up, and would not want to subdivide one offense from others within that. I think that we would leave that to the Ethics Committee. I would speak against the amendment. And if there's no further discussion, Representative Howes.
Chairman, I did make an oral amendment that I will withdraw just for the record so we don't get this mucked up.
Thank you, Representative Howes withdraws his oral amendment. And with that, members, those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
Aye. The amendment is not adopted. Next amendment, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you.
Which amendment?
The A-20 amendment.
Thank you. Representative Hillstrom offers the A-20 amendment.
Members, I took this language right out of the Pledge to America in an attempt to transfer the power back to the people and ensure they have a say in what goes on in government, in particular, in this case, Congress. Congress has adopted or stated that they are going to ensure that bills are debated and discussed by the public and by publishing the text online for at least 3 days before coming up for a vote in the House of Representatives. There'll be no more hiding legislative language from the minority party, from opponents, and from the public. And the legislation should be understood by all interested parties before it's voted on. Given this is such a popular agenda, I believe that it's proper to be in our rules as well. We do not want to hide it from the public or the minority. And so, Mr. Chair, I would ask for a roll call.
Representative Hillstrom asks for a roll call. There will be a roll call discussion to the A-20 amendment. Discussion? Well, I would echo Representative Hillstrom's intent on this. I would say that that is an excellent idea for our U.S. Congress, for 435 members, and for the predicament they find themselves in. However, we are at 134 members. We have a Minnesota way of doing things, and we also have something that we need to do in this state that they don't have to do that I wish they had to do, which is balance their budget. And that requires us to do a lot of heavy lifting in the last 48 hours of session in many instances. So I would speak against the Hillstrom Amendment. And if there's no further discussion, I would ask the clerk to take the roll.
Doubt?
No.
Plowski?
Yes.
Anderson?
No.
Banyan?
No.
Benson?
Yes.
Reinert?
Yes.
Hamilton?
No.
Hillstrom?
Yes.
Hoppe?
No.
House?
No.
Kelly?
No.
Knuth?
Yes.
Lane?
Yes.
Lilly?
Yes.
Mack?
No.
McNamara?
No.
Murphy?
Yes.
Nornis?
No.
Norton?
Yes.
Tamar?
Yes.
Pepin?
No.
Scott?
No.
Thiessen?
Yes.
Westrom?
No.
Dean?
No. There being 11 ayes and 14 nays, the Hillstrom Amendment is not adopted. Next amendment. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A-17 Amendment.
Representative Murphy offers the A-17 Amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a pretty straight-up amendment to add corporation to Rule 9.10 after the word lobbyist. As we all know, corporations are gaining influence in campaigns in Minnesota and across the country, and there may be further court decisions that will yield further changes. I think adding corporations will assure that Minnesota campaigns and the rules are clear and above board, and it is, in your words, maybe a little bit of belts and suspenders, and so I'd ask for your support. Thank you.
Discussion to the Murphy Amendment. Discussion. Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the so looking at the current rule on 29.9. Never mind, I'm reading it wrong. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, can I ask for a roll call, please?
A roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if staff can help us. I thought it's against the law to take corporate contributions.
Mr. McCormick, Representative McNamara would like to know if indeed it is still illegal for us to take corporation money.
Mr. Chairman, yes.
It is. And as I find it on, I'm sorry, Representative McNamara, you have...
My question was answered.
Oh, there. And I've, in the time, been able to find it. And as has been stated by Mr. McCormick, it is, in fact, illegal to accept corporate money currently. And before adopting this language change into the rules, it may very well be a good belt and suspenders approach. But seeing it is already illegal, and I don't know the ramifications of inserting that, I would speak against the Murphy Amendment and may have been able to accept it if I had a little bit more time to check it over to see if there was any other ramifications. But without that, I don't know what the unintended consequences of that may be incorporating that, and it is superfluous anyway, so I would speak against it and ask the clerk to take the roll.
Stout?
No.
Pulowski?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Banyan?
No.
Benson?
Aye.
Reinert?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hillstrom?
Aye.
Hoppe?
No.
House?
No.
Kelly?
No.
Knuth?
Yes.
Lane?
Yes.
Lilly?
No.
Mack? McNamara?
No.
Murphy?
Yep.
Nornis?
No.
Norton?
Pass.
Tamar?
Yes.
Pepin?
Nope.
Scott?
No.
Thiessen?
Yes.
Westrom?
No.
Dean?
Nope. There being 8 ayes and 17 nays, the Murphy Amendment is not adopted. Next amendment. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two remaining amendments I do have, but I'd like to offer an oral amendment, if I may, first.
All right.
And that's to add a new section 6.06 that would state that the an author of a bill shall not present a bill to a committee while also acting as chair of that committee. We've had a lot of circumstances in the first 2 weeks of session where the chair has presented his bill and remained seated maybe we can make an exception for the Rules Committee, but where the chair has remained seated as chair of the committee and is calling on members to as they offer their amendments and recognizing members, and I think it's better procedure for a chair to hand the gavel over to another member while they are presenting their own bills, so that they're, you know, I just think it's better, more open, transparent process and a fairer process. So I can read it again if you want. Would that help? I'm sorry. I kind of ran through it quick.
Sure, you can go ahead and read it.
Okay, so it's 6.06. An author of a bill shall not present a bill to a committee while also acting as chair of the committee.
Discussion? Representative Howes. Chair Howes.
Does that mean just simply that the chair has to move up there to do it, or they can't do a bill in their committee? I'd rather they can't do a bill in a committee.
No, Mr. Chair, that's why I said acting, as opposed to serving as chair. So they'd have to come up to the table, as opposed to sitting up there.
Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to speak in opposition to this oral amendment. We at the legislature have had a long tradition of doing it both ways. It's been precedence that some chairs choose to stay at the committee table and some have gone to the testifiers table. It's been done both ways. I don't think it's caused any problems in the past, and I would encourage members to vote no on the amendment.
Further discussion? For discussion, all those in favor of the Thiessen Amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. Next amendment, Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. I'll move the A26 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Thiessen moves the A26 amendment.
I think it is getting handed out. It's here. It comes. So, and I'll describe it basically as it's passed out, if that's okay with the chair. Basically what this, it deals with redistricting and states that no redistricting bill will pass the House floor unless it has 20 votes from members of each of the two largest caucuses in the House. So you have to have somewhat of a bipartisan agreement around the redistricting plan before it will become law.
Thank you, Representative Thiessen. Discussion to the A26 amendment, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Thiessen, that would be requiring redistricting bill to have a higher threshold than any other bill that we have here in the legislature, so I would encourage members to vote no.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Thiessen.
I'm not sure that that's exactly correct. We do require bonding bills, for instance, to have a two-thirds majority to pass. And I think redistricting is a very different type of bill from any other bill that we have in the legislature. I mean, what we're doing is setting up the boundaries to make sure that we have fair and adequate representation for all Minnesotans. And I think that is something that the people of Minnesota have expressed an interest in making sure that we proceed not in a partisan basis as we go forward on how we redistrict, but do it in a way that's nonpartisan or bipartisan or multipartisan, and make sure that we actually have districts that are fair to all, so that everybody has a voice in the process. And all this is doing, I think, it's a very common sense amendment that would make sure and require us and force us as this process moves forward to work together across the aisle to come up with the plan that best represents Minnesotans, best represents the many communities of interest that we have in this state. So I believe it makes a lot of sense, and I would ask for a roll call.
A roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Further discussion, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to clarify that it does not require more votes. It just says that the makeup must at least be 20 votes on each side. So you still have the same number of votes to pass a bill.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Further discussion? Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure who to address this to. I don't know, maybe Mr. McCormick or Representative Thiessen. Do you know, have we ever had a rule like this in the past during redistricting? 10 years ago, 20 years ago, anything?
Representative Thiessen, any of your research yield anything on that?
No. No, my research hasn't revealed anything on that.
Thank you, Representative Thiessen. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question would be, do other states, do they do this as well? Are there any other states that do this as well?
Representative Hamilton, thank you. Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. At least from the states that I have reviewed, I have not seen any other state that requires 20-20 from either one. And I think I wanted to also point out to Representative Thiessen that when you had 85 members in the majority, there was no minority members that were required in voting for the bonding bill. You had met the two-thirds threshold. So this would be a higher standard than what we require for any other bill that we have.
Thank you, Representatives. And with a 20-vote minimum, we've never had, I don't think, fewer than 20 members, but we've probably come pretty close on our side of the aisle. And I hope we never get there again, but we might. We might. So I would speak against the amendment and ask the clerk to start with the roll call.
Nope.
No.
Kowalski?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Danion?
No.
Benson?
Aye.
Reinert?
Yes.
Hamilton?
No.
Hillstrom?
Yes.
Hoppe?
No.
Owes?
No.
Kelly?
No.
Knuth?
Yes.
Lane?
Yes.
Lilly?
Yes.
Mack?
No.
McNamara?
No.
Murphy?
Yes.
Nornis?
No.
Norton?
Yes.
Tamar?
Yes.
Pepin?
Nope.
Scott?
Nope.
Thiessen?
Yeah.
Westrom?
No.
Dean?
Nope. There being 10 ayes and 15 nays, the Thiessen Amendment is not adopted. Further amendments?
Mr. Chair, I do have one more, and I apologize to the committee. This is now the only committee I serve on, so you're getting the brunt of all the pent-up need to speak here. So it's the A21 Amendment, and this is one that should be familiar to members. We had this one on the floor on the first day of session. Basically is... asking that we focus on getting our budget balanced before we move on to other items, and in particular constitutional amendments. And so it essentially says that no constitutional amendments should be considered in committee or on the floor until the federal, or not the federal, but until this, that would be forever, until the state budget is balanced. And I'd request your support.
Thank you, Representative Thiessen. Discussion to the Thiessen Amendment. Representative Banyan.
Thank you. Coming around to you right now is a copy of Amendment A22. I ask to amend the Thiessen Amendment and substitute the language in the Amendment A22 that you're receiving. I'd like to speak to that, Mr. Chairman, please.
Yeah, Representative Banyan, if you could just explain your amendment to the amendment.
The amendment is an attempt to try to come to some agreement with Representative Thiessen, whose motion on the opening day I found some sympathy with. I do think the budget's important. I think it's something that we need to act on. I thought, though, that the language proposed and that's before you now in the A21 amendment that he has offered has a couple bits that might be more stringent than we would agree to. For example, a constitutional amendment could not be heard in a committee on line 1.7 in his version. And I thought that might be a little bit stricter than we wanted. And I want to know what we really meant by passing the budget and getting our work done. So as we researched this, the thing we thought would be most germane is that we have come to an agreement that, in fact, the Ways and Means Committee, acting on behalf of the House, has passed its budget resolution to meet its requirements of meeting a balanced budget. When it arrives at that particular point, we have, in my mind at least, come to a statement of here is how we've balanced the budget. We'll have done the first major step of what needs to get done. And to me, this fulfills, I think, the spirit of what Representative Thiessen has proposed, but gives it in such a way that other members here who may wish to bring constitutional amendment to consideration will have the opportunity to do that. If we pass the amendment as Representative Thiessen has brought it, it does not appear that we could hear any constitutional amendment at any time in 2011, since completing the budget is something that normally happens on the last day while we have the cars packed up and ready to go home. So I ask you to vote to substitute the language of A22 for A21. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bannion. Discussion to the Bannion amendment to the amendment. Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure about substitute amendments as a proper procedure, but I think you could probably just amend the amendment. So I appreciate Representative Bannion's efforts to kind of think this through. And I think there's two separate pieces that he's raising. One is this issue of whether an amendment would be considered in a committee before a budget is balanced or enacted into law. And I think that question merits some discussion and consideration. But, you know, for folks that have been through the process and know what it means to establish a budget resolution, it may be a first step along the process, but it is far from actually getting to the place where we enact the bills that actually meet the budget resolution. I think it is clear in the law in the original amendment, the A21 amendment, what you have to do before you can consider the amendments, and that's that a budget is balanced in all of the different funds, including the revenue side, the tax side, that have been passed by both houses and enacted into law. So the standard is very clear. I also understand the fact that you can't consider anything during the first year of a biennium, but the fact of the matter is no constitutional amendment will get on a ballot until after the second year of the biennium. So even if it does in practice preclude consideration of those kind of amendments during the odd-numbered year of a biennium, there would still be an entire session to go before any constitutional amendment could ever be brought before the people of Minnesota. So I would oppose the A22 amendment, but I'm very much open to eliminating the language in the A21 amendment, which is part of the A22 amendment, which takes out the words "in a committee or."
Thank you, Representative Thiessen. Further discussion to the A22 amendment to the amendment. Any further discussion? I would just like to speak in support of the Bannion amendment to the amendment. And I think that Representative Bannion took several of the good points of Representative Thiessen's.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. McCormick.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I don't want to interrupt your speech.
But Mr. McCormick.
We need a small technical amendment to the A22, and it's just simply deleting line 1.3.
Oh, sorry. Well, let's incorporate that. We will delete line 1.3 of the A22 amendment.
No, he's incorporated.
All right, we will incorporate that. And with that, all those in favor of the A22 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
The amendment is to the amendment is adopted. We are back to the A21 amendment, the Thiessen amendment as amended. Discussion. Representative Holbert.
I'm sorry, I'm not officially on your committee, but the Banyan amendment, I think, has a problem if, in fact, the targets are going to be adopted in Ways and Means.
Thank you, Representative Holbert. Mr. McCormick.
Then the House may never, under the rules, the House may never adopt budget targets, which would mean I don't think you could ever bring a constitutional amendment to the floor.
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, as I read the A22 amendment, you have to remember that under Rule 4.03, the adoption of a budget resolution is something that is written as a may. The House may adopt a budget resolution, especially in the second year of the biennium. Under this resolution, until the House has adopted a budget resolution sufficient to meet the constitutional requirements for a balanced budget, no constitutional amendment may be considered on the calendar of the day, the fiscal calendar, or the floor calendar. After the adoption by Ways and Means of a budget resolution, then the floor can consider these things in the first year of the biennium. During the second year of the biennium, as I read this, suppose that the legislature has now adopted a budget resolution for the first year. Constitutional amendments are still in order and may be adopted up until the February forecast. After the February forecast in the second year of the biennium, if the most recent forecast predicts a deficit, then no constitutional amendment may be considered on the floor calendars until Ways and Means adopts a budget resolution. Ways and Means Committee may choose not to adopt a budget resolution in that second year. If the Ways and Means Committee chose not to adopt a budget resolution in the second year, then the floor will not be able to have a constitutional amendment on any of these calendars.
Further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A21 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, nay.
No.
The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, can I just...
Representative Thiessen.
I'll talk to Mr. McCormick afterwards. I had a question about the council representing, but I can talk to him offline.
Okay.
Thanks.
Any further amendments?
Mr. Chairman.
Discussion, Representative House.
Is it too late to ask for a division? Because I believe that amendment failed. He ruled on it.
It's too late to ask for a division.
The proper motion would ask for a reconsideration.
Mr. Chairman, did you vote yes?
I did.
Would you please reconsider?
Yes.
If you can vote to reconsider. You don't have to vote on the prevailing time.
Representative House.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you would first make the motion to reconsider, I could speak to your motion.
You can make that motion.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I would move to reconsider.
Representative House moves to reconsider the A21 amendment. Representative House.
I think by adopting that amendment, we put ourselves in a box where a constitutional amendment will never be brought to the House floor or could be maneuvered in such a way by the majority party. So I believe we have to vote no on the A21 amendment.
Further discussion?
Follow me.
If it would be all right with the committee, I'd like Representative Holberg, since it was her primary consideration, to perhaps weigh in on this, if that would be all right with the minority. Representative Holberg, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is the first that I saw this amendment. I think it is quite restrictive. Historically, at least in some years In the second year, we don't even come back till March, sometimes, maybe even later, from what I understand. You know, I guess it's the will of the committee, but I whatever. It's Mr. Chair, it's your committee.
Well, Representative Holberg, if you have serious consideration about this moving forward, I would move for reconsideration of the vote, and I would ask that the we consider moving this to the floor, perhaps, if there's further review that needs to be done on this moving ahead, and we would ask for immediate reconsideration of the A21, and would it be appropriate to bring that up for a vote at this time?
Is the motion to reconsider? Or is the motion to? Are we doing it over here?
We have some
the motion to reconsider.
Then we'll be up for debate.
Yes. The motion is to reconsider. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay.
No.
Discussion. We're in discussion on the A21 amendment.
Let's get a roll call.
Let me just. Representative Banyan.
Oh, you got a roll call? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I apologize.
We are in.
Point of order, Mr. Chair. All I was trying to say is just you just need to say the vote passed or failed.
The vote has been reconsidered. Further discussion, Representative Banyan.
Let me be sure I've understood Representative Holberg's issue here. Is the issue in terms of the second year issue, or is it? I mean, we do expect to have budget targets at some point. Am I correct? Is your concern over somehow we get a bad forecast in February of 2012 or March?
Well, and maybe I've misunderstood this, but if I just I have to walk through and say the date. So during an even number year, that's 2012. If the most recent forecast of state revenue and expenditures predicts a deficit for the biennium ending on June 30 of the next odd numbered year, right? So then you're saying that you can't do anything on constitutional amendments until a budget resolution has been adopted to eliminate the projected deficit in that biennium or projected
in that current biennium. Yeah.
Okay, so it's silent then on the tails part.
Yes.
Of it. Okay. And
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Representative Banyan.
Sorry, I'm just trying. I may be violating protocol. I apologize for doing so. I'm just trying to work through with her the language that makes this work. Now, this language is silent on anything happening in the tails. This is only directed to the 2012-2013 biennium.
Thank you, Representative Banyan. Representative House.
Mr. Chairman, we need to be careful here. Mr. McCormick said that the rules state with the Ways and Means Committee may pass a budget resolution. Doesn't say they must. So please tread lightly and be very careful with this amendment. You will box us in a corner. We could always bring this up a month from now if we really had to.
Representative Howes, we have gone over this with House Research and have, I think, perhaps the discussion is around the meaning of the word House. Has been the primary point of discussion. But if members, particularly those on my side of the aisle, still have difficulty with this, we can have this discussion, I'm sure, again on the floor. I would vote, I would speak against the A21 amendment and ask that we continue our discussion with research and each other onto the floor. All those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, nay.
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. We are adjourned.
Wait, no.
We didn't do the bill. Oh,
I'm sorry.
We're not adjourned.
I'm sorry. We are not adjourned.
Yeah, we are.
Reconvene.
Reconvene.
We need to vote the girls themselves.
Members, please take your seats.
Whatever you notice.
Members, if we could please move the Rules Committee. We have a quorum. I'd move the Rules Committee recommend to the House the adoption of the A5 as amended as the permanent rules for the 87th session. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. They are adopted. We are adjourned. Sorry about that. Let's get on the floor.